The Truth News Network. Partisan spin?
Not here.
Identity politics?
Go somewhere else.
This is TNN, the Truth News Network. To break it down for you, here's Dan Newman.
And as usual, we work really hard to get you facts, put you right out in front on everything going on that is important in our nation, and there is a bunch going on. Today's story, titled, Violence Runs Rampant. The left is either there or going insane. Now, I knew some anti-Trumpsters in the GOP, members of the Democrat Party, and socialists further left than Democrats, have turned into mind bots bent on the destruction of President Trump and all he stands for. But what is playing out almost daily was unimaginable a couple of years ago. We are actually seeing violence, severe violence, if there is such a thing as non-severe violence, playing out on a national stage from leftists not directly at Mr. Trump, but at those who work with and for him, visibly support his agenda, or are simply not Democrats. Sure, he won the election, and many don't like that. But is that a sufficient reason for people to morph into apocalyptic zombies who attack anyone who supports this president? Want a few examples? From Las Vegas, a longtime College of Southern Nevada sociology professor is facing felony gun charges in connection with an on-campus shooting on the second day of classes. Mark J. Byrd, age 69, was charged last month with discharging a gun within a prohibited structure, carrying a concealed weapon without a permit, and possessing a dangerous weapon on school property, court records show. He was found bleeding from a self-inflicted gunshot wound to his arm about 8:15 in the morning on August 28th outside a bathroom in the Charleston Campus K building in Las Vegas. Charleston Street, for those of you that know the city, is a very main thoroughfare. Inside the bathroom, campus police found a $100 bill taped to a mirror along with a note that said, "For the janitor," according to Byrd's arrest report. And of course, the $100 bill was to compensate the janitor for having to clean up the blood. On the floor of the restroom were a black and white .22 caliber pistol and one spent shell casing. The sociology professor was hired August 26, 1993, and was an emeritus faculty member at the time of the shooting. College spokesman Richard Lake said Byrd was not scheduled to teach any courses during the fall 2018 semester. He said he shot himself in the arm to send a message to President Trump. That's kind of like that old story. You know, I've never understood why a man and a woman get in a fight. Maybe the guy finds out the woman was unfaithful to him, and so he takes a gun and shows her by shooting himself in the head. You know, I don't espouse violence of any kind, but you would think if somebody was mad at someone else, they'd shoot someone else, not themselves. Anyway, from Northern California, a Castro Valley, California man shouting profanities about President Trump attacked a Republican congressional candidate who was working an election booth at a town festival, threatening him and trying to stab him with the switchblade, authorities and the candidate said last week. Farzad Vincent Fazelli, age 35, was jailed after the alleged attack on Rudy Peters at the Castro Valley Fall Festival. Alameda County prosecutors charged Fazelli on Tuesday with a felony count of making criminal threats and misdemeanor counts of exhibiting a deadly weapon and possessing a switchblade. And then there's Berkeley. From the LA Times, this story. There can be no justification for the violence perpetrated by a group of leftist protesters who attacked supporters of President Trump and others during an otherwise peaceful rally against hate in Berkeley. Is that not a conundrum, an oxymoron? They're protesting against hate, holding a rally against hate, and they attack supporters of President Trump. Whether they are described as black bloc or anarchist, the nomenclature isn't important. The masked, black-clad protesters are criminals, not the vanguard of a righteous resistance to fascism. They also were traitors to the thousands of peaceful demonstrators who gathered in Berkeley's Martin Luther King Jr. Civic Park to counter a No to Marxism in America rally, a non-event that drew a relatively small contingent of right-wingers after its organizer, fearing violence, had urged supporters to stay home. The punches black bloc protesters are throwing are injuring their own side. This is a story from the LA Times. This is thuggery, not activism. And it has become too familiar a phenomenon in Berkeley, belying its reputation as a citadel of free speech. In February, for example, 150 black-clad agitators caused $100,000 worth of damage when they smashed through the city protesting a planned UC Berkeley speech by right-wing provocateur Milo Yiannopoulos. The speech was then canceled. And it's not just there, folks, those two California examples and the one from Nevada. It's all across America. Every day brings new examples of the supposedly open-minded, inclusive, tolerant, peace-loving left threatening or attacking Trump administration officials or Trump supporters. Hatred and intolerance have been the standard operating procedure on the extreme left. But thanks to enablers among Democrats and the press, it's quickly becoming dangerously mainstream. Here are some of the ways in just the past few days that the left has expressed its tolerance for those it disagrees with. Martin Astroff went to the campaign headquarters of Representative Lee Zeldin and then threatened to kill Zeldin and Trump supporters generally, according to news accounts of the incident. As he left, he nearly ran over a campaign staffer with his car. An angry Trump critic allegedly punched a homeowner in Boynton Beach, Florida, for having a Trump flag in his front yard, and then dragged the homeowner 30 feet while driving away. A bookstore owner in Richmond, Virginia, called the cops after a woman started harassing former Trump advisor Steve Bannon, who was browsing in the store, just shopping. Former Clinton aide Philip Raines later tweeted out the bookstore owner's contact information in a thinly veiled attempt to encourage attacks on the store. Raines defended the tweet, saying, "I'm providing a service." A group of protesters following Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell out of a restaurant in Kentucky shouted, "Vote you out, and we know where you live, bitch." Brandon Straka, a gay former liberal who posted a video complaining that the left devolved into intolerant, inflexible, illogical, hateful, misguided, ill-informed, un-American, hypocritical, menacing, callous, ignorant, narrow-minded, and at times blatantly fascistic behavior and rhetoric, and sparked the walk-away Twitter trend, says a local camera store refused to serve him, thereby proving his point. "I'm shaking right now," Straka tweeted. "I just went into a camera store to buy a camera and a light and a microphone, and they recognized me from TV. I was refused service because they said it was for alt-right purposes." And then Alan Dershowitz, once the darling of the liberal left until he started to question the merits of special counsel Robert Mueller's investigation, says that a woman at a party on Martha's Vineyard was heard saying, "If Dershowitz were here tonight, I'd stab him through the heart." Horror novelist and reliable Trump hater Stephen King sent a tweet over July 4th encouraging progressives to go find a Trump-supporting friend, the one you haven't spoken to since November of 2016, and give him or her a hug. Trumpies, find a liberal snowflake friend and do the same. Just for today, let's all be Americans. The response was an outpouring of outrage at King, with one woman tweeting that it was the scariest thing you've ever written. And there's a fast-growing list. Breitbart News recently started compiling what it characterizes as acts of media-approved violence and harassment against Trump supporters. The list is now up to not 50, not 100, not 150, not 200, not 250. 258 incidences of violence, and the number's climbing fast. Breitbart counts more than two dozen incidents of threats, intimidation, and in violence against Trump officials and supporters in the past month, or mainstream journalists excusing such actions. That's likely just scratching the surface, since no doubt many cases of abuse like that go unreported. Wow. And it's not just physical violence. A couple of more examples of that, and then we're going to summarize this. You're going to want to stick around. This is good stuff ahead, folks, on the Truth News Network.
In every age, a technology is created that upends the foundations of society. The wheel, the printing press, the internet. Now, in a world sliding into financial chaos, a new technology is changing the way monetary systems work around the world. It is called Bitcoin. Bitcoin is a new form of money controlled not by banks, governments, or corporations, but through mutual commerce between free individuals. To learn more, visit weusecoins.com.
You love chocolate.
Chocolate.
You love M&Ms.
Oh, yes.
But your tastes have grown up, and you're just not wild about super sweet milk chocolate, so you've been avoiding M&Ms. Well, fear no more.
Huh?
M&M's Dark Chocolate to the rescue.
My heroes!
M&M's Dark Chocolate Candies. Available wherever fine candies are sold.
Fake news, spin, anger, violence. How do you sort through the chaos? You tune in to TNN, the Truth News Network.
TruthNewsNet.org.
Very applicable to today's story. We're talking about violence, and it is everywhere in our nation. And it's not just physical violence. How about some examples? Is Maine Republican Senator Susan Collins being bribed to vote against Supreme Court nominee Brett Kavanaugh? That's what she and others are saying. A crowdfunding campaign to encourage Collins to vote against Kavanaugh has the senators and some others sounding the alarm. The conservative-leaning news site Newsmax reported that a prominent Republican elections lawyer is calling for an investigation into what it described as a more than $1 million threat hanging over Collins' head, depending on her vote on Kavanaugh. In a statement to Newsmax, Collins said she believed there was an attempt to bribe her vote and said she wouldn't be the target of quid pro quo fundraising. Let me ask you a question, a couple of them. Where did this all begin? When did it all begin? Beginning with the Obama campaign ahead of the 2008 election, the division between conservatives and liberals, Republicans and Democrats, began to really ramp up. Obama represented drastic and dramatic changes for American voters to contemplate, and not just racial changes. He brought to the campaign radical new ideas that heretofore had never been a big part of any presidential campaign. There were socialist candidates and even communist candidates on past ballots. But all past non-traditional political representatives drew sparse support among voters, very little support. Obama represented something new and something different for a new and different generation. Past generations, Americans had experienced the same structured, starchy, tired political process in which pretty much old pontificating politicians campaigned every couple of years with promises of the moon. And when they were elected, all voters got were moon beams and a bigger tax bill. Oh, and a smaller paycheck. Obama was different. He had a fresh new way to package some historically old political principles that had been summarily rejected in the past. But he didn't call his ideas socialism or communism. And his young, refreshing, and vibrant way of delivery made him an instant rock star. He was amazingly effective selling a bottle of your grandmother's rose water that had been repackaged and labeled Excellente Parfum. The packaging was good enough to draw enough from the past generation to join those politically disenfranchised from the new generation to elect and then re-elect him. After the 2012 election, Obama realized something, and I think he didn't like it. You can put lipstick on a pig, but it's still a pig. You heard that before? He repackaged his politics, But he didn't quite get the results he thought that he should or that he would. But he was successful at turning the heads of a young generation of Americans who knew very little else politically other than his politics. He had sowed the seed of breaking away, of demanding change, and going for it. He was the first president since Reagan to give Americans a new direction and then leading the country in that direction. Unfortunately for Hillary Clinton, she could not maintain that cloud of optimism he created above millennials. The sun burnt the cloud away, and it revealed the truth. There were no jobs, no big salaries. College was expensive, and so was living on your own. Employers actually expected employees to work before earning paid vacations. Oh, and they wanted you to come to work every day. Oh, and they wanted you to be on time when you came to work. Cell phones and cars and house rent or house payments cost a bunch. The Obama phone and cash for clunkers and billion-dollar government handouts to Solyndra and all those shovel-ready jobs were never really there or never really worked. People became angry because the gravy train was either gone or it never really existed, and they did not like that. Enter Donald Trump. Fortunately, at least for those who think this way, there were enough of us who remembered the old reap and sow principle upon which America was founded. You remember this one. You get out of life equal to what you put into life. There are no free rides. Everyone has to work to eat. To not just listen to his campaign speeches, but to believe he could and would do what he promised if he was elected. Many didn't like that. After all, it was an unpopular truth that he talked about. And when they went to get answers, here we go. Those mainstream news outlets that they had turned to gave them reinforcement for their anger at things not being what was promised. Things like this. This is from the New York Post. President Donald Trump's relentless attacks on the media as the enemy of the people are close to sparking violence that could lead to journalists being attacked around the world. The outgoing United Nations Human Rights Commissioner said that, according to a report. We began to see a campaign against the media that could have potentially and still can set in motion a chain of events which could quite easily lead to harm being inflicted on journalists just going about their work, and potentially some self-censorship. That was said by Zayd Raad al-Hussein, who reported that to The Guardian, and it was republished in the New York Post. And in that context, it's getting very close to incitement to violence, he said. Now notice, the words that he used as a quote of the president stated that the media portrayed by Trump as the enemy of the people. The president never said that. He said fake news media are the enemy of the people. And so we see the narrative of the mainstream media taking everything this president says or does out of context and plugging it into their narrative. From CNN, three people who were pushed and shoved while protesting at a 2016 Donald Trump campaign rally cannot sue the president for inciting the crowd. A federal appeals court has ruled. The three-judge panel ruled unanimously in favor of the president, saying that Trump saying, "Get them out of here," during the rally in Louisville was not a valid claim of incitement to riot, which is a misdemeanor under Kentucky law. Kashaya Wanguma, Molly Shaw, and Henry Brousseau attended a rally for Trump on March 1st of 2016 to peacefully protest the then-candidate. Wanguma was carrying a sign with Trump's head on a pig's body, according to multiple news reports. After Trump said, "Get him out of here," several members of the audience, including Matthew Heimbach, a representative of the White Nationalist Traditionalist Workers' Party, and Alvin Bamberger, began to attack the protesters, according to a judge's ruling. The three protesters accused Heimbach and Bamberger of assault and battery and pressed charges of incitement to riot, negligence, gross negligence, and recklessness against the Trump campaign. The negligence claims arising from the plaintiff's allegations that Trump knew his supporters would attack protesters. Interesting. Not only is he a billionaire, not only is he a great campaigner, now he can read people's minds. In particular, the complaint says that Trump's directive to eject Wanguma, a black woman, was reckless given the presence of a white nationalist group in the audience. So let's summarize all of this, folks. Where in the heck are we? You got it figured out yet? The left defends such actions as justified because of Trump's policies or his actions. The truth is, this is how extremists on the left always respond to politicians and policies they disagree with. They threaten, intimidate, try to shut them down. If you don't think so, try attending a speech by a conservative speaker at any liberal college in the U.S. Yes, we know there are haters on the right, and Trump can be and is sometimes crude and abusive. Far too much for me, but that's the point. Even a whiff of hatred or intolerance on the right always and correctly receives widespread condemnation, included by Republicans. The same is not true on the left, not even close. Instead, Democrats and their handmaidens in the press are busy normalizing violent, abusive, intolerant behavior when not encouraging more of it. They seem to have forgotten that we live in a representative democracy where we settle debates over public policies peacefully at the voting booth. We have a chance to settle that dispute again in November. The media will not accept anything else but a bloodbath at the expense of Republicans, and the principal Republican they want to bleed is Donald Trump. But it seems that even that will not stop the anger and violence. That doesn't all come from angry young Americans. Sure, much of it does. But they're joined, those youngsters, by many 1960s radicals that bear the mark of the last move of anarchy in the U.S. Remember these? If you were around, if you're a baby boomer, marches, bombings, riots, campus shootings, increases in violent crime. That was from the 60s. And you know what? We're getting another glimpse of it right now in America. There are only two ways to change the tide. Vote and pray. The prayer needs to start soon, way before Election Day. In fact, I surely hope it's already started. We're in trouble, folks. Thinking people, praying people, voting people are the answer. Thanks for joining us today and every day at the Truth News Network. Have a good one. Back tomorrow.
Facts and evidence is all you'll see and hear on TNN, the Truth News Network. Find it exclusively at truthnewsnet.org.